bringing you a common sense and fresh perspective to creating a just society. This is Common Sense on Social Justice. You'll get equipped with the tools you need to carry out social justice right where you are. Now, here's the host of Common Sense on Social Justice, Michael Davis.
Welcome back. We're continuing our study of Dilexita, the apostolic exhortation recently released by Pope Leo XIV on love for the poor. We're in part three now. We're studying chapter two today, God Chooses the Poor. Again, these chapters are built into subsections and looking at God's choice of the poor here in chapter two. In a time in history when Christian nationalism is rearing its ugly head, especially here in America, I want to present to you true Christianity, or more accurately, what it means to be a true disciple of Jesus Christ. Let me ask you, what are you actually doing? I mean, I have said it so many times, Jesus makes it abundantly clear in Matthew 25 what the terms of the kingdom are and by what we will be judged after death. It is not enough to mentally assent to these things. Jesus says, commands us to visit people in prison, to feed the hungry, clothe the naked, welcome the stranger, and so on. And it is not enough to mentally assent to these things or to mentally agree that Jesus was right when he said them. Rather, you must actually do them in real-time action. So, I ask you, when was the last time you actually visited someone in prison? When was the last time you actually fed a hungry person? I don't mean have you given to a food bank, by the way. When was the last time you actually physically handed food to another individual who was hungry in need? When was the last time you actually handed a pair of your extra shoes to a person without shoes or whose shoes were worn out? When was the last time you actually welcomed the immigrant, the stranger, the homeless? When was the last time you wrapped your arms around a pregnant mother who was facing the choice of abortion and loved her and welcomed her? When was the last time, not that you mentally agreed to it, but that you actually did it in real-time action? In section one here, entitled The Choice of the Poor, the Pope really challenges us with the fact that the preferential treatment and option for the poor is not just a Vatican II thing. It is a real thing that God does, is chooses the poor. In fact, James, in the letter of James in the New Testament of the Bible, the Apostle James, he says that there is was a habit of when they did their gatherings as a church, the poor were forced to sit on the floor so that the rich could have comfortable places to sit. And James is baffled by this. And he tells them, he's like, how can you do this to the poor when it is the poor that God has chosen to be rich in faith? The poor are the ones that God chooses for preferential treatment. So why would you take them and put them on the floor? Why not live out Mary's Magnificat and make the rich sit on the floor? Now, there is a strange thing that I ran into over the last couple of weeks. Again, I mentioned in an earlier episode having issues with Wi-Fi, continuing to have those issues. I don't think I'm going to be able to pull this up, but it was something I was wanting to share, and it's called And I, if you want to read it for your own sometime, it's called The Ten Commandments of Satan. It's actually, Satan counters everything God does. So there's actually a real thing. A friend showed me this a couple weeks ago, had me read it over, wanted my thoughts on it, and it was interesting, to say the least. It's The Ten Commandments that Satanists live by. And on the surface, what I was struck with these Ten Commandments of Satan, is how easily it was to possibly agree with these. I mean, right? What I did is I put myself in a mental frame to just be average person that doesn't maybe think things through real deeply, because I tend to be a deep thinker and analyze everything. But I read them just on the surface, and I thought, not bad. On the surface, one of the commandments was live for yourself. I mean, that was kind of obviously satanic in its origin. But some of them were like, treat others equally as they treat you. And I thought, it's kind of pretty close to the golden rule. But then I remembered, and I told my friend, I was like, remember that we are told in the scriptures that Satan comes to us and appears as an angel of light. But that's the trickiest. And so I noticed the small nuance that Satan would use in his Ten Commandments to say, treat others the way they treat you, or treat others equally the way they treat you. And by throwing in that word equally, then it throws us off. We're like, oh, that's kind of like the golden rule. And it's not the golden rule. The golden rule is to treat others like you would want to be treated, not the way they are actually treating you. And that particular satanic commandment is quite the opposite of the call to love our enemies who are not treating us the way we want to be treated. So as I read through those Ten Commandments of Satan, I was like, yep, that's exactly how the world operates, as I read through these various commandments. And the way the world operates is there's a give and take here. Like, yeah, I'll give, but I'm also going to take. All right, so it's really all about me, and if you wanted me to love you, you got to get in alignment with me. That's kind of the gist of those commandments, that's the gist of how the world operates. But the nature of God is quite different than the nature of Satan, right? The nature of God is merciful love. By the way, sentence one of this section, Choice of the Poor, in paragraph 16 says, God is merciful love, and his plan of love, which unfolds and is fulfilled in history, is above his descent, above all his descent and coming among us to free us from slavery, fear, sin, and the power of death. So in Christ, we see the nature of God. Well, Christ is God. And in the nature of God, it's not about Satan's way of, I'm going to treat you the way you treat me and I'll make it equal. No, it's about the nature of God is there's a very unequal exchange going on here. There is an inequality going on in that I'm giving myself to you, and you're not able to repay it back. That's called merciful love. And that's what we're called to as disciples of Jesus Christ, is to live out this merciful love, not this satanic, it's all about me. Now, I want to read through some thoughts in this section. He says in chapter 7, let's go up here. In paragraph 16, he goes on to say, we came to know him, that is God, in the smallness of a child laid in a manger and in the extreme humiliation of the cross, where he shared our radical poverty, which is death. It is easy to understand then why we can also speak theologically of a preferential option on the part of God for the poor, an expression that arose in the context of the Latin American continent, and in particular in the Puebla Assembly, but with which has been well integrated into the subsequent teachings of the church. So, in Western civilization, I'd say in humanity in general, we tend towards the rich. We want the favor of the rich. We want the blessing of the rich. We are excited when we're in the presence of the rich, but not God. God, who owns everything, you talk about extreme wealth, would be God. Could you imagine if God cashed in on the material wealth of the universe? If God were to liquidate the universe and say, I want cash for the cost of the universe, I mean, trillions of dollars is a drop in the bucket compared to what it would, the amount of money it would be. God is wealth beyond wealth. But in that, God humbles himself and becomes poor for our sake, to identify with us. And to be a disciple of Jesus Christ, to truly love God, is to identify with the poor, not with the rich. Now, in paragraph 17, it says, it is in this perspective, then, that we can understand numerous pages of the Old Testament in which God is presented as the friend and liberator of the poor, the one who hears the cry of the poor and intervenes to free them. God, the refuge of the poor, denounces through the prophets, we recall in particular Amos and Isaiah, the injustices committed against the weakest, and exhorts Israel to renew its worship from within, because one cannot pray and offer sacrifice. Hear this. One cannot pray and offer sacrifice while oppressing the weakest and the poorest. Now, in modern times, ways that we are oppressing the weakest and the poorest is by ignoring them, by judging them, by refusing to give them jobs. But even in the products we buy, if in the product, the shoes we buy, the clothes we buy, whatever, do your research. Do not be lazy, because you will be judged for this after death. Do not be lazy. Do research. Are the products I'm buying, do those companies use child labor? Do they use slave labor? Do they harm the planet in the production, in the making of this product? And if they do, don't buy it. Because by buying that product, you are oppressing the poor. Preferential option for the poor, by the way, does not mean we exclude those who are not financially poor. Rather, it means that we investigate how our past choices have affected the poor, or envision how our current choices are affecting the poor, and how current choices will affect the poor in the future. I think of Mary's Magnificat, who I've already talked about a few times now in this series, but Mary envisions a world where there is a great equalizing, a leveling, so to speak, where the rich are sent away empty, meaning that hungry, that in other words, they're letting go of that wealth, where the powerful being taken down off their thrones, where the poor are being lifted and the hungry are being filled. Mary envisions this leveling of society, and where the poor, again, are lifted up. We are confronted with how our choices are lifting up the poor and bringing the rich to a realistic level that is true equality. Now, in section 2, entitled here, which begins at paragraph 18, Jesus the Poor Messiah. In paragraph 19, the Pope says, the ways in which Jesus was radical poverty, not lived radical poverty, but in the ways he was radical poverty, was in his birth, his flight to Egypt, his being rejected in the synagogue in Nazareth, where they drove him out, his death outside of Jerusalem. Let me talk about these. Jesus was radical poverty in his birth. To try to imagine that Jesus did not get the safe process of birth with doctors and nurses on hand, with, you know, all the correct people that need to be there in case an emergency happened in the birth. He did not have access to be saved from that emergency. Jesus was born in the lowest, most abandoned way. And that happens today in many countries in the world where people are born in the lowest, most minimalist way possible. But it wasn't just his birth, it was his flight to Egypt. King Herod went crazy about Jesus' birth. He felt threatened. He threatened to kill Jesus, so he had King Herod ordered all the infants 2 years and younger to be killed. Mary and Joseph takes Jesus and flees to Egypt. So Jesus becomes poor in that he had to leave his culture. He had to leave his continent. I mean, they fled to an entirely different continent, fleeing from the Asian continent to the African continent. He had to, he became impoverished in language because he went to a country where they would have had to learn a different language to survive in Egypt. Jesus was rejected. And that's what we see in the flight to Egypt, is he was rejected by the wealthy and the powerful. And then the third example the Pope brings out of Jesus being radical poverty is his being rejected in the synagogue in Nazareth, where he proclaimed himself the Messiah and they drove him out, it says. So he was rejected by his own people. And then in his death outside of Jerusalem, Jesus did not get to die a proper death, if there is such a thing. But it wasn't enough they crucified him, but by crucifying him outside the walls of Jerusalem, there is the ultimate rejection of Jesus. So he lived and died rejected and poor. And hear this. Jesus was not just the poor Messiah, but he was the Messiah of the poor. Pope Leo XIV brings this out. That Jesus was not just a Messiah who happened to be poor, but he was also the Messiah of the poor. He reads from the prophets there in the synagogue where he's rejected and says, I came to set the captives free and to preach good news to the poor. I'm the Messiah to the poor. Certainly not the Messiah to the wealthy. And maybe that's why the wealthy rejected him. They were tripped up by his agenda. Now in paragraph 20, here the Pope says that Jesus' poverty is a sign of his bond with the Father. Now think about that. Try to just somehow let that sink in a little bit. However you imagine God the Father to be. And by the way, don't we create idols? Even making God himself an idol because we're not understanding God for who God is, but rather creating God in our own minds. But here, listen to what the Pope says. Let this sink in, that Jesus' poverty is a sign of his bond with the Father. And they are conditions of which the disciple must follow him. You want to follow Jesus? It has to be on those conditions. So the renunciation of goods, riches, and the securities of this world become our sign of identifying with Jesus. Let that sink in, oh wealthy American Christians. Despite what Joel Osteen and others tell you, God is not concerned about blessing you financially. God is concerned about your soul. The only way for you to spend eternity with God in heaven is to renounce this world. It's a must. Now, in paragraph 21, the Pope states that the church in her identity in Christ must become the poor, walking with the poor. Again, the church in her identity in Christ must become the poor, walking with the poor. That the church must be a place where the poor have privilege. And that's where we're going to stop today because of time. I don't want to linger on. There's much more to talk about, but I want to expound on other things in the next episode as we continue covering chapter 2 here. It's too lengthy to cover in one episode. So we're going to stop there, but I want you to think about this thought as we leave. The church, the Pope stresses here, in her identity in Christ must become the poor, walking with the poor. Pope Francis made it clear during his pontificate. He says his desire for the church is that the church would become poor. And we all know the church has struggled with that at certain times in history. But Christ must, the church in her identity in Christ must become the poor, walking with the poor. So it's not me as rich Santa Claus being charitable to the poor. Rather, it is me becoming poor and walking with the poor. He says the church must be a place where the poor have privilege. There's that preferential option for the poor. Can you imagine the church becoming a place where the poor have privilege? Is that what you see in your parish when you go to Mass on Sunday or where you go to your worship gathering if you're not Catholic? Is that what you see in your church? Do you see the poor taking the place of privilege in your church? That is what we're called to. This stuff of creating a just society right where we are is not the stuff of, oh, well, I'm going to make everything equal and okay. No, it's a call to suffer. It's a call to let go of the comforts of this world, to become poor to where you have to truly mean it when you say, give us this day our daily bread. And then I'm not going to just give to the poor. No, no, no. As a disciple of Jesus, I'm going to walk daily with the poor. And may God give us the grace to do that as we create a just society right where we are.
You've been listening to Common Sense on Social Justice with your host, Michael Davis. A common sense and fresh perspective to creating justice where you are. Share your comments and questions with Michael by emailing sjcommonsense@gmail.com. That's sjcommonsense@gmail.com.